all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we're going to be chatting about menstrual care, taboos, and chronic illness with Isabella Gosling of Let's Talk Period AU. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm so excited to be here and be on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. We were just talking a little bit before we hit record, and I was explaining to Isabella that the show has an audience of primarily women and non-binary folks, and it's a lot of people who come from environments that were, you know, religious or more conservative and didn't really have a lot of education about our bodies or how they work. And so we've done a lot of conversations on the podcast about sex and sexual health and sex education, but we've never gone into menstrual care. And I wanted to talk about that both from the education standpoint and to have an honest conversation that removes some of the shame, because I think that it can be really easy to get into an environment, even as an adult, where you feel kind of awkward and weird talking about menstrual care, and you don't feel comfortable talking about it with your doctors or your partner, or, you know, and that can cause problems down the line as well. And then on top of that, we haven't talked about chronic illness really at all on the podcast, and we definitely haven't talked about it related to menstruation and related to, you know, uteruses and all of that good stuff. So I wanted to dive into that both from an education standpoint and then also just from a shame standpoint, where we're going to have an honest conversation and you can be in the safe environment of your home. And if you feel awkward, that's fine. You can just sit and listen, and there doesn't have to be any shame in it. And so with that being said, do we want to talk a little bit first about your background and your podcast and kind of how that all got started?
Yeah, for sure. So I am a registered primary school teacher and a registered nurse. So was a teacher first and then went back to university and studied to be a nurse. So I work full-time as a nurse now in the intensive care unit, and I live in Australia. So if you hear my Aussie accent, I live in Queensland, Australia. And I started Let's Talk Period in 2020, in March 2020, literally a week before the world sort of shut down with COVID.
Oh, holy cow.
Yeah, I had no idea what was to come, but it came from a place of having a personal experience living with endometriosis and adenomyosis and not wanting other people to feel the same way I felt when I was first diagnosed back in 2015. So I received a diagnosis of endo and adeno back then, and there was not a lot of information around. The information that was around online, you'd go down Google rabbit holes trying to figure it out whether it was legit or not. And I felt really lonely. I didn't have anyone else who really knew what the conditions were. So I thought, I was working in the endo-adeno space as a volunteer for an organization, and I thought, look, I don't want anyone else to feel the way I felt. What can I do that will help make someone's life that little bit easier? And I thought, let's start a podcast and have those conversations with people who are in the pelvic health space, who are experts in their field. So pelvic physiotherapists, I've had gynecologists, acupuncturists, exercise physiologists, you name it, we've had it, dietitians, nutritionists, all those evidence-based professionals who help you on your endo, adeno, PCOS journey, so you can access reputable information. And then on the flip side, also solo episodes that include tips, tricks, and just general life things when it comes to managing a chronic illness as well. So that was sort of how that all started. And then now it's 2023 and it's you know, just gone 3 years after doing the podcast initially, and it's just grown so much. And we host events and have mentoring, and it's just evolved so beautifully, and I'm so very thankful.
I love that so much. And I have to say, I love your website. I obviously, I have websites of people constantly because this whole podcast is just guest based. We have interviews all the time. And when I looked up your website, it is so fucking cute. It is like the cutest website. It's so informative. It's so well done. It's like the design is so adorable. And I know that has nothing to do with anything that we're talking about right now, but I saw your website and I was like, oh, I love this so much. Like I just had to get that out there. It's a really well done website. It's really cute.
Oh, thank you. I just did it myself. So that's even more of a, you know, accolade for me because I have not much idea when it comes to tech stuff and, you know, I just gave it my best shot. So thank you.
Yeah, no, it's so cute. Well, yeah, let's dive into, I mean, actually, why don't we just start with, do you want to give a little bit of context on what endometriosis is for people who are listening and might really not have any idea?
Yeah, sure. So that's super valid if you don't, because for so long it was considered to be a taboo topic that wasn't really discussed because it has the component of your period involved in it. So we all know that periods were shrouded in shame and stigma and taboo for so long, and we're still trying to break that even today. But endometriosis is a condition that affects people assigned female at birth, and in very rare cases, people assigned male at birth as well. And it affects approximately 1 in 10 people assigned female at birth. The numbers are harder to gauge because of the time to diagnosis and the invasive procedure that you need to have to actually receive a diagnosis. So it's as accurate as it can be, but they think that it could actually be as high as 1 in 5 people living with the condition. It's just trying to get that data is harder. So we've got 1 in 10 people affected who are assigned female at birth, and it's a condition where tissue that is similar to the lining of your uterus. So the lining of your uterus is called the endometrium. So that tissue that's similar implants in other parts of your body, and it causes microbleeding, inflammation, and a whole lot of symptoms, which I'll go into in a second. And it can be found in anywhere in the body now. It's been found on every organ in the body. So it used to be it had been found in every organ except for the spleen, but as of 2021, that's no longer true. So it's been found on all organs. So the fact that it's labeled as like a reproductive health condition or a period disease is kind of inaccurate, because it's not just found on the outside of your uterus or the outside of your ovaries or in your pelvic region anymore. People have had it on their lungs, they've had it on their diaphragm, it's been found in the brain in really rare cases as well. So it is, yeah, it is so much more than just a period disease. However, it gets its nickname from being a period disease due to the fact that a lot of the symptoms are associated with heavy bleeding and pelvic pain or period pain. So,
So
that's a little rundown on what endo is. And then the symptoms associated with it is different for everybody. So not everyone with endometriosis will have the same set of symptoms, and that's another challenge to diagnosis as well. So you can have that heavy bleeding, you can have period pain or pelvic pain throughout the month, even when you're not on your period. You can have fatigue, you can have bowel symptoms, bladder symptoms, like that urgency or a UTI feeling, lower back pain, pain with sex. There's fatigue and headaches is another one as well. Like, it just affects everybody differently. And just because you might have all of those symptoms, someone else might only have one or two of those symptoms. And then other people, they might have no symptoms at all and only get diagnosed when they're trying to have a baby and they're not able to, and then they go for a diagnostic laparoscopy to see what's going on, and it's endo. So affects everybody differently, and the pain and the symptoms associated with the disease doesn't actually correlate with how much disease you have. So it's a really interesting condition that we don't know a whole lot about as of yet. We're still figuring out what actually causes it, so therefore there's no cure. Right. But yeah, so that's a little rundown on endo.
Okay, so I apparently know nothing about this. I did not know any of that. I entirely assumed that it was it just entirely central to your reproductive system. I had no idea that it could like be spread to other parts of your body. That's wild.
Yeah, and it's not very well known, and people think that like diaphragmatic or endo on your lungs or diaphragm is really rare. But I think what's being found out now is that it's not rare. It's just not diagnosed very well as of yet, because people think that it is still just that period or menstrual reproductive health disease. And when you're just going in for a laparoscopy and focusing in that pelvic region, you might miss what's up higher up. If someone's experiencing pain when breathing on their period, then that could be a symptom that they might have endo on their diaphragm or lungs. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. Wow. And there's still so much that we just don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So two follow-up questions. Can you talk a little bit about how to find out if you have endo and what the diagnosis process is like? And then could you also go in a little bit? I know there's no cure. Do you know any treatments or ways to manage it? Do you want to dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So currently, the only way to be definitively diagnosed with endometriosis is undergoing a laparoscopic surgery, which is basically keyhole surgery. So they put a laparoscope, which is a camera, in your belly button, and they make tiny little cuts in your abdomen and pump your tummy up full of gas, and they will have a look around and see what they can find. Then they are excising or cutting out tissue that looks like endometriosis, and endometriosis can look like chocolate cysts. It can look clear, like transparent, sort of bubbly. It has a lot of different appearances, so you really have to be well versed in what you're looking for when you go in. So it's important to see a surgeon who specializes in endometriosis, otherwise those sorts of things might get missed. So that tissue is cut out and then sent for testing, and then you'll get pathology results back that confirm, yes, this tissue is endometriosis. But in the meantime, your doctor can have a look at characteristically from what they've cut out looks like endo until they get that confirmation through pathology that, yes, it is endometriosis. And there is a role with things such as ultrasounds at the moment as well. There's a lot of research going into the use of ultrasound in diagnosing endometriosis. So it's helpful for detecting deep infiltrating endometriosis, so endo that's really deep in the tissues. But if you have superficial endo, which is just sitting on the top of tissues, then it might not necessarily be very easy to detect. So using ultrasound is an option for sort of planning for surgeries and things like that as to the location of where endo might be, but it's not 100% foolproof yet, so you can't use that alone to diagnose endometriosis yet. And then there's a lot of work going into trying to develop a blood test as well. However, that's not successful either yet. So currently the only way to diagnose endo is through that laparoscopy surgery and having excision surgery. So there's a whole nother conversation around ablation, which is burning off endo, but once it's burned off, you can't send that tissue for testing. So excision is the gold standard for endo. And then, as I said, we don't have that cure. So what do you do with a disease that doesn't have a cure? you've had your endo cut out. So that's one part of the management strategy is having a laparoscopy, getting your endo removed. But some people don't want to have surgery, and it's everybody's choice to do what's best for them. So there are lots of ways to manage endo, and it's all about a holistic approach. Back when I was first diagnosed, the only thing I was offered was surgery, and I wanted to find out what was wrong with me. I was so happy to have that surgery and try and get some answers. So had surgery, and then that was it. I wasn't told that you needed to manage it going forward. I just thought you had surgery and then you were done and it got better, which was not the case. So a lot more has come out around the holistic nature of managing a chronic condition. And so this includes different people for each person, because as I said, everyone's symptoms are different. So it can be affecting you in different ways. So this could be seeing a pelvic physio if you're experiencing pelvic pain, because they can help to relax your pelvic floor, relax those nerves and relax those muscles that are really tense from being in pain for so long. It could be seeing a psychologist to talk through all that you've been through, because the delay to diagnosis is between 7 to 10 years. So that's a long time to figure out what's going on for you and have a chronic illness that's causing you pain. So it can be really mentally draining. So it could include a psychologist. It could include your gynae specialist as well, having surgery with them, hormonal medications. So things like the oral contraceptive pill, devices like the IUD, all those sorts of things that you chat about with your specialist, include in your management plan. It could be seeing a dietitian to work on reducing inflammation. It could be seeing an acupuncturist. It could be seeing an osteopath to work on relaxing your fascia layer. It's all about figuring out what your goals and values are and what you need in that time, and then switching it out as your needs change. So you don't need to see that set of people forever. You can change it as your needs change, because if we saw everybody all at once, we would have no time to do anything else. And we'd also be very broke because it costs so much money. So yeah, that was like a very long-winded explanation.
No, that was so helpful. And also you are in, like, the way that you explain it is also makes a lot of sense to my brain. So that's helpful too. That was actually what I was going to follow up with, was it sounds incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
It sounds like that would cost a lot of money. And I know in the US, our healthcare is a nightmare. And especially related to conditions that are, chronic illnesses just in general, but then specifically chronic illnesses that primarily affect people with uteruses. That's something that they love to just ignore. It's it's just not on the top of anyone's priority list. And I can't imagine trying to manage that if you don't have good healthcare or if you have no healthcare, because I've had the only experience that I've had with chronic pain. And I've actually started to look into this a little more, because I think that I actually have more chronic pain than I realized, which is one of the things that's really interesting to me about chronic illnesses and understanding, I guess, what quote unquote normal looks like. Because I think so many people will get used to just living with enormous amounts of pain. And then until there's an awareness of, hey, it's not supposed to be this painful, then that's when people can start to be like, oh crap, is there something off? Is this not right? And I know I've had friends that have had, incredibly painful periods or incredibly painful sex, and not necessarily all because of endo, but because of, vaginismus and other things that they didn't realize they had. And because there's such little talk about it and such little education, the awareness isn't there. And for me, that's back pain. I had no idea that my amount of back pain was abnormal until literally 6 months ago, I moved in with my partner and he has just lived with me and watched how often I grimace and like grunt and I'm like, oh, my back, oh, my back, oh, my back. And he's like, hey, that's, you're 24. Like, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be in that much pain. Like, you, we should go to the doctor and make sure you don't have some like serious injury. And the only experience I have with long-term like holistic care was I got into a car accident and had to do, you know, chiropractic and massage therapy and acupuncture like 2 to 3 times a week for like a year. And it was exhausting. It took so much of my time. It took so much money. And I can't imagine having that be something that you're doing long term of trying to manage something with, you know, all of these different avenues that do take a lot of time. And it's really can be underestimated how much going to a weekly acupuncture appointment takes out of your schedule. Even the gas money to get to your acupuncturist, or if your acupuncturist has weird hours, or the only acupuncturist you can see is open Friday mornings when you're supposed to be at work, like all these different things that can really twist your schedule and your bank account. And it's definitely not a convenient thing to deal with.
No, not at all. There's a lot of barriers to care that everybody living with endo faces. And again, there'll be different barriers for everyone, but barriers nonetheless. And it's not fair, but I think when you're living with a chronic illness, it's not fair in general. And you're just trying to make the best out of what you can do. But to what you were saying about how exhausting it can be, one of my very, very good friends, Danielle, she also lives with the condition, and she always talks about her chronic illness as being a third shift. So you do your work and that's your shift, like your job. And then you come home and you do your housework and make dinner, chores, all of that sort of stuff. That's your second shift. And then managing your chronic illness, going to appointments, looking after yourself so you aren't in a flare, driving to appointments, parking, all of that stuff is your third shift. So everyone else is just doing two shifts. And then when you're living with a chronic illness, you're adding a whole third shift in there. And it is really exhausting. So I think trying to find ways to negate that is really important. So if you can do telehealth, like online appointments for things, that way you have to, you get to like not have to worry about parking or money for petrol or paying for parking at the facility that you have to go to. You're in the comfort of your own home, which can hopefully reduce some anxieties as well. Can somebody drive you to the appointment? Can someone be with you to take away that mental strain, especially if you're going into a specialist appointment? That fight, flight, or freeze mechanism often comes out and you forget what you want to say. So bringing someone to your appointment, asking if they have reduced rates for people with chronic illness. Some practitioners might offer that as a service because you're going to be seeing them for an extended period of time. It's not just going to be a one and done, I'm fixed sort of thing. So asking that, trying to find free resources that are easily accessible. So that was one of the reasons why I made the podcast, because reputable information from experts that you can hopefully implement yourself without having to pay anything. If you have insurance, trying to see what your insurance covers and trying to make the most out of that. It is different here in Australia. We have access to the public health system, and then we've got private health system as well. And then we also have a chronic disease management plan. So the US might have something like that, but I'm not 100% sure. And chatting with your general practitioner, your doctor, like your primary care doctor, they might have more information around chronic illness management, because we have access to 5 subsidized sessions for chronic illness. And then we also have a mental health care plan as well, which is 10 sessions a year with a psychologist. So chatting with your primary healthcare doctor about any chronic illness options that they know of to try and like make the most of what you can get to try and negate cost as a barrier as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what the US has. My gut would say probably not anything great.
Yeah.
That would be my like instinct response. But it's an interesting thing too, because there's been a lot of conversation recently in the US about chronic illness and disability, like activism. And we've seen people, there's been a trend on not really a trend, but it's just been going around TikTok a little bit recently, where you're seeing people just chew in, like light into people who use the disabled stall in the bathroom that is like supposed to be reserved for people with a disability. And the reason why I bring that up is because there are a lot of disabilities that are not going to be obvious to just looking at someone. And luckily there have been lots of people who have corrected those folks and said, hey, don't do that. Don't like bark at someone because they use the disabled stall. You have no idea what's going on in their body. You don't know what's going on in their mind. Like not every single disability is super apparent to like the naked eye. But I do think that with illnesses like endo and PCOS, you are coming up against multiple obstacles where, for one, it's not super apparent to the naked eye. And then two, it gets written off a lot as just like, oh, you guys are babies. It's just period pain. And that I've heard that so much. I've heard it from people who have periods and people who don't have periods and don't understand, you know, the difference between general period discomfort, which, first of all, that alone is uncomfortable, hard to live with. Having that once a month can really throw off your schedule and your ability to show up to work with like a full energy level and be super present in your mind. Like I get really brain foggy on my period. Like all, you know, that can just impact you just having a period with nothing else going on. But then you talk about, you know, increased levels of pain. I've had friends that like when they have to track their period so closely, because if they know they're about to go on their period, they have to like have a warm bath ready, and they have to have, you know, take Midol the second that there's anything like a drop of blood. And it's like, okay, I need Midol. I need to make sure I'm managing this immediately. Or they're sitting there like in tears because of the pain. And these are people that also have very high tolerance levels of pain. And I wanted to get in a little bit just about the lack of education about it, the lack of research, lack of funding, because I think that it's very often an incredibly overlooked illness. It's ignored, it's belittled. And then, I mean, as someone who has had a period since I was 12, I still know so little about this. And I did go to a private school. And so I don't know if there's more information in public education in the US. I kind of don't think there's a lot more, because I know a lot of people still don't know a lot about it. But I mean, I took a health class, I took a human sexuality class, I took a biology class, I took a college level biology, human biology, anatomy and physiology, never learned about any of it. Like this has never been covered in any class that I've taken. And so you think about that, and then you think about individuals who are on their period, and periods are already such a taboo topic. You're not really supposed to talk about it. It's seen as icky and gross and dirty by so many people. You have certain religions that really look down upon it and view people as like, you know, dirty and gross and not even acceptable to enter society when they're on their periods. And then you have just the general consensus amongst most of society that just doesn't really like to educate, talk about, normalize the experience of people who have vulvas, uteruses. It's just not, they don't really like to talk about it. It's just not really normalized, not talked about. So you have all of that that encourages silence and shame and encourages people to keep it to themselves and, you know, not talk about it. And then you have the added level of the lack of education, the lack of research, the lack of it being something that is talked about. And so it makes a lot of sense why there would be a lot of people suffering from this in silence and not having any idea that they even have endo. And it also makes sense as to why that could impact diagnostic numbers. Of the statistics are probably not accurate because you have so many people that probably have no idea that they have it or feel uncomfortable talking about it, feel uncomfortable seeking out help, or don't have the access to healthcare to seek out that help, to seek out a diagnosis. And diagnostics numbers and all those statistics also impact the ability to research and the ability to fund. And so it's this lovely, ugly cycle that to me seems like it's rooted quite a bit in just misogyny and like the patriarchy of just kind of ignoring women and their bodies. But do you want to talk a little bit about just kind of the cultural taboo and also the just the overall lack of normalizing the conversation?
Yeah, for sure. Firstly, periods, like a normal period in quotation marks, generally goes for 5 to 7 days. It's mild discomfort on the first 1 or 2 days, and it can be managed with paracetamol or ibuprofen, like your non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications, and you're not needing other types of pain relief. You're still able to do your everyday activities like going to school, going to work, going to the gym, all those sorts of things that you like to do or have to do without it impacting on your life. Yes, it can be uncomfortable, but it should not be painful. Like, you should be able to manage that discomfort with those medications that I mentioned. So if you're having a period that looks different to that, then you should look into chatting with your primary healthcare practitioner or your OBGYN and say, look, I think I'm having something that's not a normal period. I'm not quite sure what it is if you don't know what you're dealing with. Or if you have a few of the symptoms that I mentioned earlier, you could be like, look, I think it sounds like endometriosis. I want to investigate this further. Or if you're experiencing really long cycles, like some people have 90 to 120 day cycles, then that could be PCOS. Like, if you're not having a period every 28 to 32 days, then that's irregular as well. So all those sorts of things. So
can I clarify what you just, yeah, were you saying that the actual period can last?
Oh, like
how long?
So, for example, when I had no idea what was going on with me, I ended up bleeding every day for 3 months. So that's like 90 days. I was like, this is not normal. Yeah. Or like other people with, when it comes to PCOS, they might have no period for 90 to 120 days because they're not ovulating. So therefore there's no trigger. So there's lots of different things that can happen.
I cannot imagine bleeding for 90 days.
Yeah, and then there's there's a whole lot of other health complications that come along with that, such as being iron deficient, and anemia.
Yeah, you're not supposed to lose blood for 90 days. Yeah. Yeah, your body is not used to that.
Yeah, so anything that doesn't look like the normal period that I just explained, please go and get that checked out, because it shouldn't be embarrassing. You shouldn't have shame attached to it, because it is just a normal bodily function. I know that for years we were told, look, it's just women's business in quotations marks. You know, it's just something we deal with. You've just got to put up with it. But anyone assigned female at birth that is living with period abnormalities should get it looked at, because it could be a sign that something else is going on. We know, for example, like ovarian cancer has a lot of symptoms that are similar to endo or adeno, and ovarian cancer gets diagnosed really late and then it's at that end stage and there's not much you can do. So the fact that these conditions are shrouded in stigma and taboo can be life-threatening. It's not just a period, it's not just women's business, again in quotation marks. It's not just something that we put up with and that we're weak for dealing with. It is important, and it is about sharing your experience and I don't think that we have such an issue with it now. I'm seeing a lot of younger generations talk more openly about periods, which is amazing to see. But for so long, that generational thing was happening with, we don't talk about it, we don't talk about it, we don't talk about it. And I know there's still people who would still be enforcing that narrative, but hopefully we are shifting that. And that even just talking with your friends about what you're going through can you can get a sort of consensus on, like, is all of my other friends going through this or is this just me? And it gives you that chance to figure out, is that normal or not? And just sharing your experience can help somebody else as well. And it helps to get rid of that shame and it helps to get rid of that taboo and that stigma, because periods are like one of the only types of blood that doesn't come from violence, yet it is so much, there's so much shame around it. Like, you're in a fight and you bleed, no one's like, ugh, you're, you know, you're in surgery and there's blood, no one's like, oh, cover that blood. Like, you know, there's all these different scenarios, like people are getting injured in sports and no one's like, oh, shame, cover that blood up. Like, it's just very interesting that that is the case still. So it's about talking up and using your voice to break that stigma and taboo. And then, I think just talking with your friends and family members, to your point about research and funding and all of that sort of stuff, I know in Australia we've just had an announcement, I think it was $10 million being invested into research for endometriosis. So we are starting to take it really seriously, which is great. We've got a national action plan. We have announced endometriosis clinics. That's something that's in the works. It's very new. I don't know what it's going to look like, but hopefully a step in the right direction. There's a conference that happens every 2 or 3 years, and it's the International Congress on Endometriosis. It just happened over in Scotland. The next one is happening in Sydney, Australia. So that's really exciting. So we are moving forward with getting more attention in research spaces. What is known about the condition is that it has a 70% genetic link. So if somebody in your family, like your mum, grandma, auntie, sister, has endometriosis, then you have a higher chance of also having endometriosis. We also know that it's an estrogen dominant disease, so it feeds on estrogen, but it creates its own estrogen. So just because you go into menopause doesn't mean that endo will stop. There's so much that we're still figuring out, but there is little advances that we're making as well. We know that there's an environmental component as well. So toxins, phytoestrogens, plastics, BPA, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think, again, with it being a predominantly women condition and people assigned female at birth condition, a lot of attention has been pushed to the side and it hasn't been spoken about for so long. And I think a lot of people have sort of just had enough. And I think it's been a lot more noise and loudness around it because people are getting tired of no one listening to them. And hopefully that means we're going towards a positive direction.
All right, for those of you who've been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scouts Honor. Scouts Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scouts Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scout's Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple, Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting! Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting because I mean, for me, I grew up with all women, like everyone. I had sisters. That was like my growing up experience. And so periods and just care as a woman, like wasn't taboo in our household because we were the majority. It was like my dad and then like four girls. And so it just wasn't like, you know, I didn't feel weird asking my dad to run to the store and get tampons. Like that wasn't a weird thing for me. However, even having a really non-shameful environment at home, I still felt very shameful about it as a teenager and an adult, just because of the way that I knew that the world and society looked at it. And it really wasn't something that I started to loosen some of that shame until I was probably in my 20s and dated someone who wasn't like was like, oh, I can go buy you tampons. Like, that's fine. Like, what size do you need? And I was like, oh, is this okay? Is this not weird? Like, you're not weirded out by this? And it like took away some of the shame. And just in the last year, probably, I've stopped hiding the tampons in my cart when I'm at the grocery store. I'm sure like anyone who's bought tampons has had that experience of like, let me like tuck it under the hash brown so that like no one sees it.
No one can know.
Yeah. And that like horrible, awkward feeling of like setting your tampons or your pads like on the little conveyor belt at the grocery store and just being like, oh, like everyone knows. It's such a weird, like shameful experience, despite the fact that it's something that, I mean, there's so many people who have periods, who have to buy tampons, who know what it's like to take care, you know, deal with menstrual care, deal with period cramps, deal with all like, it's a very shared experience. And, you know, half the people at the grocery store with you have gone through it, but yet it's still so uncomfortable and so awkward. And I think it speaks to how incredibly powerful like the tool of shame is, because it can stick around even despite the fact that you can be in a store surrounded by other people who also bleed. And it's just like, oh, nope. We're all going to be quiet and awkward and shameful about this. And so I'm so glad there's been a little bit of a shift in conversation. I think that, in my personal opinion, just in the cultural aspect, social media has been like so pivotal for that, where there's just accounts and people talking about it and people being really blunt and honest and non-shameful. And like I said, if you're listening to this podcast, the whole kind of point in my head was you're able to listen to it in a safe space. And you're not, you know, attending a period convention where maybe you still feel really ashamed and awkward and kind of like, oh, I don't really know if I should be here. This is weird. But you can be in your own safe space, have your headphones in, and no one has to know you're listening to a podcast about periods. But you can still sit there and start to like slowly unpack the shame a little bit. And it really is, it's nothing to be ashamed of, but it's so interesting how powerful that tool of shame is. And it's silenced so many people with so many different things over, I mean, shame is just an incredibly powerful tool. But I think that, like you said, I mean, even the conversation in the US right now about birth control and trying to like ban birth control. We're talking like really, really, really high stakes in a really big way here. And like you said, if we continue down this road of not talking about it, not educating, not researching, not funding, not only are we basically just accepting the fact that people who suffer from these chronic illnesses just deserve to suffer, which is a horrible stance to take. And that alone should be enough for everyone to be like, okay, we're done. Let's figure out how to get the things that these people need so that they don't have to live in pain. But we're also talking the potential of people losing their lives because of it, which is a whole other side of the conversation. And I do think it comes down to this like weird, like, ew, icky, yuck. It's a period thing. And it's like, really, we're going to let that stop us from educating and researching and funding this, that people don't die of ovarian cancer? That's so stupid. Like, that's what we're going to let stop this conversation? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It is. And not only ovarian cancer, like, I'm not saying endo causes ovarian cancer or anything, but just like, there's a higher risk of developing certain types of cancers if you do have endometriosis.
Yeah.
Also, the endometriosis lesions can inhibit blood supply to organs. So I know that there's been cases where people have lost kidneys due to endometriosis because the kidney died from the endometriosis blocking off the blood supply. And so you're losing organs, not everybody, obviously, but like people are, and yeah,
there's a chance.
Yeah, and with conversations around the use of birth control as well, that's a management tool for people living with endometriosis. So if you're taking away that lifeline, right, then there's also a conversation around mental health again and people struggling so badly that they might die by suicide due to the fact that they can't live the way they're living anymore. And taking away people's right to choose how they look after their bodies is a very scary conversation that is being had in the US currently. Obviously, I'm in Australia, so I only know what I've seen on the news and TikTok, but it is a lot, yeah. And it is scary. And I really hope that someone can see the light and the writing on the wall and see what the repercussions of that will be.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, it comes down to like, just, it's obviously such a big picture issue because there are all of these symptoms, I guess, that come from the overarching lens and umbrella of just patriarchal values, where it's placing the comfort of other people above people with uteruses and people that were assigned female birth. It's just placing power, comfort, money above the safety of a really large percentage of folks. And we've had quite a few conversations about abortion care on this podcast and talking about just the horrific ramifications of overturning Roe and what that looks like. We're actually going to be releasing an episode close to voting in the U.S., like when we have our elections this November, about talking about what the laws are looking like right now. And like, you know, where there's a huge case going on that's kind of in this weird limbo space right now about if they're overturning part of the abortion pill. And like, it's this huge conversation that's very scary. And of course, at the very minimum, birth control is just someone's right to decide what they'd like to do with, do they want children? Do they not want children? That alone should just be like enough of a reason to just say, okay, well, you know, this is your right to choose. But when you look into it deeper, you know, I've had people who can't access, I've known people who can't access their birth control, and it has a drastic, drastic, drastic impact on their periods and their pain management and their mental health. And it is a form of management. It's much bigger than just managing whether or not you'd like a child, even though that is a huge reason to use it. And that alone, you know, should be enough to justify keeping it available and accessible to anyone and everyone that would like to use it. But I also wanted to just dive into, at the very kind of at the end of our conversation here, talking about abortion, talking about that whole shit show that is happening where I live. Do you want to talk a little bit about how abortions can be used as healthcare? Well, abortion is healthcare, but how abortion can be used as a solution to an ectopic pregnancy, and then the myth that abortions cause endo?
Yeah. I think when you're dealing with an ectopic pregnancy, that pregnancy is formed outside of the uterus, which is where it's meant to have the egg or embryo, I should say, is meant to attach to that pelvic wall, that uterine lining, that endometrium that I spoke about way back at the start. So when that embryo isn't attached to the endometrium where it should be, and it's formed elsewhere in the pelvic cavity, either in the fallopian tube or somehow has gotten outside the fallopian tube and is in the pelvic cavity itself, that poses a serious risk to the person who is in fact pregnant, and it can cause many, many huge complications. Like, not only if it's in the fallopian tube, you can lose that tube and then you've only got one fallopian tube, but if it's forming in other parts of the body, then it could result in like hemorrhaging. It can result in, again, like organ death due to necrosis from lack of blood supply to organs. And being able to terminate a pregnancy that is ectopic is, again, another, like, abortion is healthcare regardless, but using it for the role of ectopic pregnancy is pivotal because of the ramifications it can have if that pregnancy has to continue to progress due to the law. It can result in loss of life or permanent damage to a person just because it's been made illegal, which is very dangerous. And I think, more to the point, just because it's made illegal doesn't mean that it won't happen. It will just happen in under the table ways that are much less safe. And then again, can result in loss of life that may have been able to be negated should that have been able to be accessed easier. So that's the role with ectopic pregnancy. There's a lot that can go wrong, and having that choice removed is not, it's not a safe choice to have that removed. It can result in a lot of people getting injured and potentially losing their lives. So, yeah, abortion's healthcare. When it comes to the myth around abortions causing endometriosis, it's simply not true. There's no evidence to support that in studies. It's flatly not true. We don't know what causes endometriosis at the end of the day. We know that there's the genetic factor, we know there's a lifestyle factor potentially, and we don't know the actual cause. So we can't be spreading mistruths and myths around what does cause it, because again, I think it's being used as something to shame people and keep people doing what they're meant to be doing and conforming to society, because you don't want to get endometriosis if you have an abortion, and you're able to choose what you'd like to do. It's your body, it's your choice, and endometriosis shouldn't be a fear of somebody, because you're not going to get endo just because you've had an abortion. That's just not true.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, because I think that the folks that tend to spread that myth are also people who don't really educate about what endometriosis is, or fight for treatment, or fight for research or funding. And so it's an interesting thing to ignore, and kind of toss endometriosis, people who have endometriosis, like, to the side, and then use their illness as bullshit to try to scare people into not receiving abortion care. It's just another like scare tactic. I mean, we've talked on, if you're looking for more like comprehensive, like a huge episode of like just abortion, we have two episodes that we've just like dived super, super deep into abortion myths. We talk about the myth of like abortion causing cancer, and we, you know, dispel that. And we talk with two folks who both work for abortion education and access organizations. They are way more well-versed in it than I am. And I went into it as like someone who knew nothing and came out feeling very empowered and calm. So if you're looking for like very comprehensive information about that, you can check that one out. I don't remember what episode number it is, but I can put it somewhere in the episode notes. But yeah, I think that overall, we need to, as a society, just take steps forward. And even as individuals, because I think saying as a society can be a little bit nerve-wracking, because as individuals, we don't really have control over how society reacts to things. And all we can control is how we react to things. And so I think as individuals, spreading education, spreading resources, acknowledging that a lot of chronic illnesses are not visible to a lot of people, and that people might just be dealing with pain in their home lives and might not be talking about it. You might not be able to see that they're in pain. And so I think just adopting a stance of grace and patience with folks in general, of just understanding that there are times when people are experiencing pain and discomfort that you might have no idea. And if you have, you know, ways to support or fund organizations that help either educate or fund research, or, you know, even period organizations that help provide period care and all of that stuff, I think the more that we talk about it, the more that it becomes normalized, even if it's just one person talking about it. And I know for me, I've talked about this as my, as a part of just kind of my journey of leaving religion. But a huge part of that was following a ton of creators online and just filling my feed as much as physically possible with content that was all the stuff that I felt horribly ashamed of while in religion, and just had it on my feed. And I didn't necessarily interact with it, but when I was scrolling through, I would see stuff that helped kind of slowly break down and destigmatize some of the stuff and topics that for a long time held a lot of taboo and stigma and discomfort for me. And just being able to scroll through that was like, okay, like every once in a while, I'm getting a little bit of, you know, okay, this isn't that shameful, not that shameful. And it can be helpful to just normalize it in your own life. Because we don't always have, you know, massive control over what society does on their own.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that ripple effect of you making the change yourself. There's a really beautiful quote that I live by, and it's on the top of the blog as well. It's shame dies when stories are told in safe places. And I think it's by Anne Volkamp, I think it is. And I think having that space to share your story removes the shame. Pledging to talk about periods, pledging to talk about what's normal, what's not, and just opening that conversation up with people in your life and making that change yourself can really help to normalize things. As you said, donating to charities that are providing period care for people, or investing in research if you can, all of those sorts of things. And I do like the exposure on socials as well. Making sure you're following people who are sharing evidence-based information where you can, or people talking about their own personal experiences with conditions, as well as like invisible illnesses around reproductive conditions like PCOS, and then chronic illnesses like endo or adeno too, because you never know what someone else is going through, and just getting that little bit of insight into what their life might look like can just make you more empathetic and more thoughtful and kind as well. I live in a bit of a bubble because I think most of the people I follow normalize periods, normalize talking about endo, adeno, PCOS, and it's a bit of a rude shock when I step outside of my beautiful little bubble and not everybody feels the same way. So I think, yeah, trying to surround yourself with people who are not engaging in that shame or stigma as well is really important. And if you, this is just to your bathroom point earlier, if you do need to use a disabled bathroom because you're having a flare up and you really need to go, just do it. And if someone questions you, that says more about them than it does about you. You have every right to use that space. You don't need to explain your illness to anybody. I know there's little cards that you can use that you can get on like Etsy and stuff. Like you can just search what condition you have and you can keep it in your purse. Just like if you do feel like you need to show proof or evidence, you should not at all. But if you do need that little bit of backup, then that's like a really helpful thing that you can just keep on you that can help validate you that little bit more and get rid of that anxiety too. So just keep spreading awareness, keep sharing your experience and keep asking questions and just let's keep this conversation open and flowing and together we can remove that shame and stigma and move forward.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And I want to make sure that we give a space for people to find you because you have your podcast and resources and a blog and all of this lovely stuff that has a ton of education resources for people. So do you want to share where people can find you online?
Yeah, for sure. You can find me online in a few places. So the podcast is Let's Talk Period. So wherever you get your podcasts, you can find me there. Then on Instagram, I'm Let's Talk Period AU. And that's just because based in Australia. I'm also on TikTok at Isabella_Gosling_. If you're interested in working with me one-on-one for mentoring, I have that at my other Instagram, which is Isabella_Gosling_ as well. The website is letstalkperiod.com.au. You can submit your story to the blog as well there. There's information on endo, adeno, PCOS, chronic fatigue, pelvic pain, all those good sorts of things that I love to chat about. And the podcast has over 100 episodes on different conditions and different experts talking about various things relating to chronic illness. So I would absolutely love to have you be part of the Let's Talk Period family.
That's so cool. I love that. And I love that there's, I don't know, there's not a lot of podcasts that are dedicated specifically to period care and menstrual care and, you know, talking about taboos and chronic illness. That's not really a super well-saturated space. So I really appreciate that you've created that community for people, especially with the way that this has been approached by society and how it can really easily become probably a pretty isolating experience. And so I'm sure it's really helpful to feel like you have that community and that you don't have to just deal with it by yourself.
Definitely. And the feedback I get is much the same and it just affirms what I'm doing even more. So I'm so thankful for everyone's support and I just love what I do and I can't wait to keep doing it.
Yeah, well, we will make sure that all of that's in the episode notes. You guys can find Isabella and find the podcast, give it a listen. And other than that, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram at Mindful Minds Pod and visit us online at mindfulmindspod.com. And then you can follow me on TikTok at Fina_Bina, FINA_BINA for more deconstruction and deconversion content. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw. Take a deep breath and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys in 2 weeks.